there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
The world isn't wide enough. Get immersed in the expansive views of the 48-inch customizable panoramic display in the all-new 2024 Lincoln Nautilus Hybrid. Explore more at Lincoln.com. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Welcome to the Bike Radar podcast, brought to you by the team behind BikeRadar.com, Cycling Plus, and MBUK magazines. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe. And if you can do so, leave us a rating on your podcast provider of choice. It really helps us reach other cyclists like you. Hello, welcome to the Bike Radar podcast. My name's Tom Marvin, Senior Technical Editor here at BikeRadar.com and at MBUK magazine as well. Joining me via the magic of a new computer system that I don't actually understand is Alex Evans up in Scotland. How are you doing, Al?
Hey, Tom. All good, thank you. Yeah.
Excellent stuff. And in the studio with me is Rob Weaver. How are you getting on, Rob?
I'm good, thanks, Tom. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah. What have we been up to recently? Al, you've been testing some e-bikes, is that right? Because obviously... it's bike of the year season.
Yeah, I think the answer to your question is going to be the same for all of us, which is bike of the year, which is amazing, really cool, super good, amazing. 8 bikes each, incredible. I've got 80 bikes, 4 lightweight ones and 4 heavyweight ones or full power, whatever you want to call them. So it's going to be an interesting test this year.
Are you enjoying it?
Always. Never not enjoying it. Although
such sincerity.
I don't think, you know, I absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. Although I don't think there's been a single ride where I haven't had to wash my kit down with a hose pipe as well as the washing machine. Every ride has been a full cleanup. So, I mean, it's lovely, lovely, beautiful sunshine today. I know you guys are in a basement and I'm currently sitting in my windowless closet.
Making the most of it.
Yeah. So, hopefully some of us will be able to get some vitamin D today at some point.
Fingers crossed. It's lunch after this, so I'm going to nip to Tesco's for my cheese triple meal deal. And it no doubt will sun my skin. Rob, how are you getting on? What have you been up to other than, well, obviously bike of the year?
Yeah, exactly that. Bike of the year, but no e-bikes, sadly. Just enduro bikes for me. It's a bit more pedaling. Well, a bit more, I suppose I don't get the assistance like Al does. So maybe harder work, I don't know. But and like Al, I've been wet. I think I've got trench foot, trench hand, potentially trench body at this point. Going all wrinkly, cracking skin, all of those things.
You've been showing it off. Yeah. Al, you did have a good suggestion for some skin cream for Rob.
Yeah.
Which, has it done some good?
Yeah, it's helped, right? I bought it the other day, Al.
It's so good, isn't it? O'Keefe's Working Hands Cream in a little green pot, 10 out of 10, would recommend.
Yeah,
sorry,
it's 5 really
out of 5,
good.
We don't do out of 10.
Yeah. No, it's really good. Yeah, so I started getting loads of cracks on my fingers where the skin has just been so, you know, some of the days at the bike park, especially when it just been torrential. So I've been wet for sort of 6 hours nonstop. I'm pretty cold and my hands have suffered from it. So it's a really helpful tip from Al and it has made a difference already.
Great.
What about
right
you?
Then.
What about you? Come on, let's hear it.
Any more skincare tips?
Yesterday I was walking through floods yesterday on my gravel bike, so that was nice and fun. So I'm also getting very wet, but yeah, I'm doing trail bikes. My recent testing has been focused around climbing capabilities, so I spent a lovely couple of days in the Forest of Dean riding up hills.
And you told us you were downloading down the fire roads just for extra pleasure.
Rolling down fire roads, keeping everything nice and chill, and then going straight back up. Rooty, muddy, steep, smooth, mellow, like a big range of climbing basically, because obviously trail bikes you need to be able to get up the hill and it's an important part of the test. So I did all of that, and actually it's quite nice because you can test quite a lot of different aspects of climbing in a relatively short climb, so it's a very efficient use of time. So yeah, I've been doing that really. And yeah, riding my gravel bike a bit, which is always nice.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, sort of quite relevant to what we've just been chatting about. And in fact, I think maybe those O'Keefe's hang creams could perhaps be featured in this list, although obviously in our pre-planning, it hasn't been. As you might have seen from the title, this is five mountain bike accessories you need and five mountain bike accessories you potentially don't need. Obviously, we use a lot of accessories because we do a lot of mountain biking. So over the last, I don't know how many years of mountain biking between us we've got. I mean, I think I've got probably, how old am I? I've got 24 years of proper mountain biking. Rob, you've probably got
32.
32?
Easily 32. Maybe more.
How many of you?
I don't know. I'm really bad at maths.
Really bad at maths. We're probably talking about 70 years worth of experience of mountain biking between us, if not more. So there's a lot of accessories in that time that we have gone through. Obviously not 70 years in... It's cumulative. Right. I'm jabbering. But yeah, we thought we'd just sort of put our minds together and bring you the five accessories you do need and five you don't. So I think we'll start on the more positive note. So the five accessories that we argue that you almost definitely do need. And top of our list is mudguards. Very relevant.
Unanimously,
yeah. I think we all use mudguards basically on every single ride. Al, do you want to talk us through your particular love of the mudguard?
I do love a mudguard. And controversially, I also love a rear mudguard. So front mudguards are the popular ones. Mudhugger, RRP, Mucky Nuts. Also, you know, like RockShox do their own. Fox does their own as well, direct mount ones. Conventionally,
and the old Marsh Guards.
The Marsh Guard as well. Sorry, how do we forget that? The OG, OG mud guard there.
There you go.
Or just a piece of inner tube between your fork, crown, arch. Yeah.
Neo Guards. Was it neoprene ones?
Yes. Yeah. Chris Porter did it as well, didn't he? With the
Defender,
yes. Yep.
Oh, yeah. And the crud catcher. Let's not forget the crud catcher.
Cool.
And the THE.
That's the real OG. Yeah.
Yeah, the THE as well, that made your bike look like a motocross bike underneath the fork steerer tube plug there.
When they went wonky.
Oh, beautiful.
And then you'd still get covered in mud, but you'd have this flapping bit of plastic on your bike. Brilliant.
Amazing. So good. So yeah, mudguards, definitely front ones, absolutely essential. Like if you've ever ridden without one recently, you get so covered compared to when you've got one. It's crazy how much difference they actually make, especially a long one, which, you know, probably more important than a shorter one, I'd say. The most coverage out the back, which is the most important bit, you know, rearwards where the mud flicks off the tyre. But also rear mudguards, not very good looking, but incredibly practical. And, you know,
especially if you're snow bike racing, apparently.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Yes. Those spiked tires did not look pleasant. Also Fabio Widmer in his recent edit, where was it the Kitzbühel run that he did? I can't remember.
Yeah,
exactly,
that's it. Yeah.
He had you notice in the video, he had a mudhugger on the back there to protect his particularly sensitive areas from spikes. So yeah, mudguards, absolutely.
Always, yeah. I use a rear one on my gravel bike because I find on there it rears a bit more useful than on the front for me, and also because I've got a Lauf fork that you can't put a front mudguard on very easily.
Oh dear.
So I can't. But the rear ones are really great. But I think we all definitely use the mudguards on the front of our mountain bikes. And yeah, longer the better. I have to admit, those little short stubby ones, for me, not the one, full length, with like a seal guard as well, because a lot of them have that little extra bit just in front of your fork seals to keep them clean.
I mean, not that it really bothers you because they're all rentals that you're riding, but there you go.
It bothers me because I've got to wash my clothes in my washing machine and I've paid for
that. But your fork seals, your little jobbers.
Oh, the fork seals, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
You'll just get a hose on it anyway, it's fine, isn't it?
Jet wash, whoops.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Right, next up, Rob. We have got waterproof socks and winter gloves. Obviously, we spend a lot of time, as we've just discussed, getting very wet and chilly. And yeah, waterproof socks, I use them a lot.
Yeah.
And that ties into something we're not too bothered about, but we'll talk about that in a bit. I think you put the waterproof socks down.
I did, yeah. Honestly, the last probably 3, maybe 4 months, I mean, I don't want to admit to myself that it's been that long, but quite probably has. I have lived in these every time I've gone out riding, whether that's on the... In fact, you know what? I wear them for pretty much every type of riding because they're that good. And they do genuinely make a difference. And if you find the right pair, they keep you quite warm too. Even when you... I mean... I think it's fair to say at some point, if you've been out for an entire day in torrential rain, even if you have waterproof socks on, your feet will be wet to some extent. So it's important that they keep them at least warm too. And I think the right pair will do that. And it does make a huge difference, absolutely massive. And it kind of doesn't matter what your shoes are then, whether they're sort of lighter weight summer style shoes or, you know, they're old and battered and full of cracks and, you know, tears and stuff. Your waterproof socks will, you know, provide a decent barrier and keep you fairly dry, especially on shorter rides.
I think like where, like when I started mountain biking, you know, seal skins existed and people weren't super into them. I quite liked them, but I think in recent years, people started wearing trousers more. And that's where actually the waterproof sock then really comes into its own, because that, you know, that big hole at the top of the sock is covered. So actually they do really work. And yeah, I'm a big fan. I sort of quite often have like calf length ones because you can't see them under the trousers. Mm. So they do look a bit naff, but they're pretty good.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Those old seal ones, they were maybe not the best in terms of fit and form. They were quite bulky and baggy. And when they filled up, it was like your foot was sloshing around inside of a wetsuit boot. You know, it wasn't maybe the best. But I think now we've kind of moved on. Things have advanced a bit and they're way, way better.
Yeah, the two pairs of seal skins that I rotate through, they're very good now. Like they've got that kind of like little silicon seal at the top as well, which, you know, if you are wearing shorts, it does help stop stuff going down the tops. But best worn with trousers, I think.
Yes,
I think if you're like budget conscious, you could always make your own. I think Deputy Bike Radar Deputy Editor Jack Luke has been an advocate of this, where you get a nice merino pair of socks, put them on your feet, get a bin bag or, you know, any sort of polythene kind of structure, and then stick another thinner layer of socks over the top of that and whack them in your shoes. As long as your shoes are big enough to accommodate those three layers, you've essentially made a waterproof sock.
Just a very sweaty one as well.
A sweaty one, yes. But waterproof,
a sweaty waterproof sock.
You can always whip them off and put your sandwiches in there.
As well, yeah.
Just or have your sandwiches then put your feet in them.
True, yeah.
Midway along.
Midway along, create that barrier.
Or if you had a toasty and you timed it right, you could warm your feet up with the residual heat from your socks.
Oh, wow, you thought about this.
Yeah, not just a pretty face.
Not even that, to be honest.
Right. Well, we'll move on then. So the next one on our list of five things you definitely need and five you definitely don't, I think we're all agreed, quality tools. Now, when we sort of made our initial list and we whittled it down, one of you guys put quality Allen keys, which 100% I agree with. And I put really good quality on bike tools. So I sort of suggested the 1UP EDC tools. So really good quality pump. And a nice stashable tool that actually is pretty good. Like some multi-tools, you know, even though it's quite a small one, they're not always great, but actually I quite like a small little multi-tool. Gets into smaller spaces easier. But yeah, quality tools across the board. Doing your own maintenance obviously saves you a lot of money over taking it to a bike shop. Some people, not me, but some people do enjoy fixing their bikes, which I find utterly bizarre, but you know, you do you. But I have to admit, a good quality set of Allen keys and Torx keys as well really is worth spending a bit of money on. They round out bolts a lot less. Your Allen key pings out of those bolts less frequently, and they're generally a bit nicer too. The Wearer ones, is it Wearer or Wearer? Very fancy, and they come with color-coded sort of rubber sleeves on them as well, so that helps look out, you know, helps you find them on a very crowded, untidy workbench like I always have. Are there any particular workshop tools that you guys like? I know there is one in our didn't quite make the list, but maybe should have done make the list. Al? The internal cable routing installation tool,
yeah,
maybe?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, I totally didn't twig that was a tool, and then you say that it's a tool, and yeah, actually, you're right, it's a tool.
You wrote tool on there.
Yeah, it does say tool at the end.
Yeah, I know. That was a panicky moment there. I wonder what I'd done wrong.
I'm surprised it's gone this badly already, considering how much we prepared.
We did actually prepare a lot more for this podcast than we usually do as well.
That may be the problem. Well done, that's us. The problem. That internal routing thing. Yeah, great. That is. Yeah, I think I did three sets. So that's six ends of brakes over the weekend. Don't ask. You're not going to. So that's good. And that internal routing tool. What a godsend. I think.
Are you working in a shop? Just on the side.
Feels like it with all of the bike of the year test bikes at the moment. Great fun.
So yeah, so a little bit of cash spent on tools. You know, like, are there any particularly multi-tools that you guys like? Which what's in your sort of goes in your pack?
Oh well, yeah, I keep the PNW, that's the Pacific Northwest Components Pebble multi-tool in my pocket. It's got round edges.
Yeah, that's a good one.
The
yeah.
tool, the like the tension on the pivots can be locked right down, so they're not going to open. So if you do crash and land on your leg, it's not going to stab a hole through your femoral artery. And it's got everything on it bar an 8, basically, and anything mm-hmm. less than a 3, and no screwdrivers. But, you know, details. it's really, really good to have in your pocket. Just as like, you know, quick, oh, I'll adjust my brakes. Yeah, you can do that with it.
I think that's why I like the one-up one. You know, you can stash it with you. It's always there, either down in your steer tube or in the pump that, you know, you can attach to the frame. Yeah, really nice quality bits as well, like the actual bits fit in your bolts real nicely. Mm. So next on our list is bike-specific shoes. Now, Rob, do you want to sort of very quickly tackle this one? And then I think Al might want to jump in on it as well.
Yeah. So I think anytime we ever get asked about kit upgrades, one of the first things would be, you know, if you're wearing or riding in, you know, hiking boots or running shoes because you've just started mountain biking, one of the best investments you can make is a bike-specific shoe, whether you're clipping into, you know, SPD pedals or riding on flats, having the right shoe designed specifically for cycling makes a huge difference mm-hmm. in terms of stiffness, fit, protection as well. And probably more importantly, if like how you ride flat pedals, the interface with that pedal, the grip that it creates is so key to your experience on the bike. Anything other than a proper cycling shoe on a flat pedal is generally going to struggle and you know, to the point where you can, you know, write off a ride almost because you're having a crappy time.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say, Al?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's so many ways to do a flat pedal shoe wrong. And there's basically one way to do it right, and that's to make it grippy. Like it's, I mean, you know, there's lots of other elements, obviously, but the biggest thing is how much grip you've got that interface, because you've got four points of contact with your bike when you're standing up, two hands and 2 feet. And, you know, having two of those basically ruined because you've got rubbish, slippy shoes, it's a big
And it's quite
deal.
Crazy how many brands have, well, how many times have we sat in presentations when the brands would have gone, we made it super, super grippy. Then what we did is dial that right back so they last way, way longer, which we totally understand. You know, you're making people's money go further. We get that. But if it's, if you're going to sacrifice grip in order to do that, and people are going to, you know, shin themselves on their pedals or just not be able to hold on through a rough section of track, what's the point?
Yeah, totally agree.
Is Absolutely. It still 510 the way to go? Or has anyone else jumped in and expanded that?
Well,
specialized.
Yeah, so it's, yeah. Yeah, specialized. Yeah, and Ride Concepts and also Unparalleled as well. Those four brands are pretty much leading the charge. I know Shimano's got some new shoes that you guys kindly posted to me. That I need to test, and I've actually heard good things about them. Freelance tester Mick Kirkman, who helps us out a fair chunk, he's tested a pair and said they were really good. So
I've got the winter ones.
We'll see.
I've got the winter flat pedal ones, and you know, it's the first time in a while that Shimano shoes have genuinely come away from. You know, I actually put them on because the weather was so bad. I wanted to ride flat pedals, and these were the only sort of winter waterproof shoes I had with me at the time. And I sort of thought, yeah, you know, okay, I'll take the hit in terms of grip, but they were actually really good. I came away really impressed. The only thing would, you know, is they're the world's hardest shoe to put on. I'm pretty sure I actually slipped a disc doing it, but
actually, yeah, genuinely,
yeah, pretty much. But the grip is actually decent. Maybe not quite as good as Specialized or 510, but it's good.
Okay. All right. Well, we've done our sort of five that you do need. And in an interesting segue into the five of, well, bits of kit that maybe you don't need, number one on our list, Rob, is expensive winter mountain bike shoes.
Yes. So, well, because these are so specific, right, you're only going to wear them for a few months a year.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have probably included it if waterproof socks weren't now so good. But when you look at the price of these things, you know, you're dropping probably over 200 quid.
Yeah.
On most, I think most offerings, or any that are probably decent. And I guess my point here is that it's not that they're bad or they're no good. It's more that if money's, you know, if your budget's limited, buy the socks instead, save your money and spend it somewhere else. I think they're a nice thing to have. They're a real bonus, especially I would say if you're doing really long rides, you know, whether that's, you know, XC gravel, you know, proper adventure stuff where trying to look after your feet's far more important. But if you're just blatting about in the woods or at the bike park or whatever it might be, dropping that sort of money, I don't think is essential.
Mm-hmm.
That's my take on it.
Yeah. Do you ride in them, Al?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. But so I use 510s, Trail Cross Gore-Tex. I've got three pairs on rotation because they take so long to dry out. Yeah. But I think the biggest flaw with waterproof shoes is the height of the waterproofing and the height of the cuff. So if you get any kind of trouser to shoe gap, you know, say when you bend your knees and your hem of your trouser lifts up and it reveals a bit of leg, as soon as that's exposed, water gets inside the shoe. Whereas with socks, they're a little bit higher, you know, they'll come way up your calf, depending on which ones you buy, of course. So, you know, as soon as you're getting big water, it's not so good.
And the good thing about those is that they feel that there's no real major difference between how they feel versus their regular shoe, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, the Trail Cross ones are probably the least grippy of the 510s compared to the Impact Pros and the Freerider, but they're still one of the most grippy shoes currently on the market. So, you know, they're the least grippy 510, but still way grippier than the vast majority.
But they don't feel massively overbuilt and bulky and...
Oh, not at all.
I think
they're actually quite lightweight.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're quite lightweight.
And I think on the clipless side, it's maybe a little different potentially where there's a bit more going on. I mean, you did a shoe test last year where they were more sort of XC orientated. And that's, I think, you know, it's like, if that's what you're going to go out and do these epic rides through the winter, great. They're worth the money. But like I said, now waterproof socks are so good, you can just save that cash.
Yeah, 100%.
You know?
Yeah. I think the other nice thing about sort of using the same shoes that we've been using all year is that you have that consistency and feel. Yeah. And if you're particular about things, and, you know, I guess we go through a lot of shoes and we use a lot of things, so maybe we're quite adept at being adaptable. But it is nice just sort of slipping on a really sort of regular pair of shoes and just going riding. And yeah, okay, your regular shoes might take a bit of drying out, but so do the winter ones. And, you know, once they do get wet, then they're really, really wet.
They get really heavy. I find, you know, if you ride them on the road, especially once they're sort of full of water and sloshing around, they get really heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feels like two Cornish pasties on your feet.
Are you putting them in your sandwich bags as well, like Jack Luke?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
All right. Well, so the next one, this is something that, you know, obviously we spend a lot of time riding bikes, which quite often will have what we're about to talk about. And they are, again, I guess in a similar way, nice to haves. You can go wrong with them, and actually brands quite frequently do. But carbon wheels and carbon bars, we think maybe you don't need them.
Go on, tell us.
Okay, well, first up, I guess why you'd have them, and they look fancy, and they often are very nice sort of things to have. And there are some very good, you know, in the carbon bar space, for example, they're relatively lightweight. You know, one-ups, for example, are pretty comfortable. Carbon wheels, they look great. Again, if you're, you know, on a cross-country bike, they can be very, very lightweight, which is really useful on a race bike like that. On an enduro bike, you know, sometimes that stiffness can be really useful potentially, but a lot of the time they can be either too stiff or sort of expensive without really needing to be, when actually alloy bars and alloy wheels feel really nice on the trail. You know, okay, you might have a slight weight penalty, but in terms of sort of comfort, in terms of stiffness, everything sort of seems to be there. And when it comes to the wheels, repairability of an aluminium wheel, carbon wheels break when they break. They're kind of done for. Whereas an aluminium wheel, you might be able to pull it back from the brink a little bit. And they're just a lot more expensive for very, very marginal gains, if any gains at all.
I think that's all fair.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, absolutely. 100% on board, yeah. I mean, I guess the only thing you could say in contrast is that you could build a softer carbon handlebar or a softer set of carbon wheels, particularly one-ups carbon handlebar as a notable standout in the a sea of carbon handlebars that can feel quite stiff. And also we are one's triad wheels, which I've been lucky enough to have a set on my SRAM. We are one arrival bike that was delivered with the transmission thing when that came out. Those wheels feel really good. They feel really nice. So, you know, that's maybe something to consider.
All right. Well, we're going to rattle on to our third thing that maybe you don't really need, and that is inserts. Now, I added this one in, and it's mostly because for myself, in terms of my riding and what I do, I'm yet to sort of really feel the benefits of them. Now, some of the benefits are, you know, increased tire stability, lower pinch punctures, and that sort of thing. But for me, like as a regular trail rider, they add weight, they add faff, and a lot more of a pain in the ass to fit than a regular tire on its own. Now, I know some people do like them. I know, Al, you do ride with inserts quite a bit. So maybe, no, you don't ride with inserts quite a bit. We'll cut that bit out. So I know, Al, you're an absolute hater of... of inserts. So while I sort of don't really feel the need, you objectively dislike them. Do you want to very quickly explain why?
Yeah, I think, I mean, personally, I think they offer absolutely no advantages over running a thicker casing tire. So if you're struggling with tires folding, with pinches, with whatever, buy a downhill casing rear tire or front tire, whatever it is that you're struggling with. Inserts, okay, you want to run lower pressures? Sure, but when your tire deforms, it butts up against the insert and that feels horrible. Like it almost removes the intuitive, reflexive flex of the tire casing. Instead, it just makes it feel really unpredictable. It's never going to stop slashes either. Like an insert isn't going to stop your tire from getting slashed and puncturing. And yeah, okay, it might reduce pinches, but once again, it's not going to stop it. It's not worth it. Just don't bother. Buy a thicker tire. If you're struggling, buy a thicker tire. Feels much better.
You're not a fan. I think it is. To be fair to the world of inserts, there are fans. And sadly, Luke Marshall, who's one of our esteemed colleagues, he is a fan of inserts, but he's in California. So he's not here to defend them. Rob, do you use inserts at all? Are you a fan?
I don't use them.
No.
I think maybe I would... consider it more if I was going racing, potentially.
For the safety aspect?
Yeah, just to try and keep air in the tyre.
Yeah.
Nothing more than that. But saying that, I rode all of the Stone King Rally a couple of years ago on a double down or two double down tyres and had no issues.
No bother at all.
Yeah. And
wasn't that during the great tyre shortage of 2022 and you had to use shorties or something, wasn't it?
I didn't use shorties, but I did have to. It took me a while to find the tyres I wanted. but yeah, I rode around, you know, that is brutally rocky and that is 6 hard days of doing a lot of riding. And I had no issues. And like Al said, right now I run downhill tyres on the back of my bike just for that stability. And also part of the reason I didn't go for it at the Stone King was if I did have a problem, they are a real pain to deal with when you're, if you're trying to, you know, in the middle of a time stage, trying to whip an insert out and then you have to kind of carry it with you and stuff. I thought, nah, just, I haven't really used them a whole lot. I won't bother.
Yeah. Maybe the world of maybe downhill is where they've got one run and if they've punctured, they punctured. But outside of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if, you know, if you do puncture and you're out on a ride and you need to take your insert out, it's like a sash, a nice sealant-covered sash of honour
that
you could wear around your...
leaking all over your nice, expensive jacket, which is a good segue.
Oh, dream. Right. Alex, you don't think that we really need expensive, super technical jackets and trousers. Go on.
Yeah, so this is actually a fairly recent thing for me. I kind of do a bit of U-turns on this. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to have some really nice bits of clothing in my repertoire. All of it's destroyed. It's all absolutely ruined, like delaminating fabrics, ripped and torn from pedal snatches. The bum patches have all worn out. Pockets break. Just stuff gets ruined. It just gets ruined when you're mountain biking. Where are you mountain biking? You're in a forest. You're in like dirty, muddy, manky conditions. And no matter how many times you look after these things, or even if you're genuinely careful, it just gets wrecked. So spending £400 on a pair of trousers, yes, they might perform well for a little while. And yes, you know, they look nice and they do feel nice. Is it worth it? I'm not so sure it is. I think you're better off layering up sensibly, accepting the fact you're going to get a bit soggy, but stay dry.
But stay warm.
Sorry, stay warm. Stay warm. Sorry. Yes, sorry.
If you want to hear a bit more about waterproof tech, of course, there was a podcast about 2 months ago on the tech of waterproof fabrics, which I thought was very interesting. But no, I agree with you. Like, I do wear waterproof lowers more than I wear a waterproof top just because I don't like getting a wet bum. If you're wearing a chamois and you get water in there and you're sort of like riding around in a wet nappy, it's not very nice. Get a little bit of nappy rash. No one likes that. But generally up top, unless it's absolutely hosing it down, and maybe at a bike park where I'm not getting so sweaty. I'm kind of with you on that. The one I really like actually is waterproof gilet.
Mm.
They do get ruined.
Just when you're wearing your vest. Just
me in my waterproof vest
with the guns out, unzipped as well.
That's a bike park attire exactly right there, isn't it?
Pigless helmet.
Right, and final item on the stuff that maybe you don't really need, GPS tracker, ride recorders, and Strava. Rob, do you want to take a lead on this?
Well, so I added Strava just because for me, I'm not really bothered by logging. You know, I genuinely do ride with the Garmin pretty much 100% of the time, apart from at the bike park, because I'm interested in seeing how I'm getting on.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not bothered about sharing it so everyone else knows how I'm getting on.
Yeah.
Or where I am or where I'm riding.
Even if you get KOMs?
I couldn't care less. Honest to God, I really couldn't give a flying.
Al?
Well.
He loves a bit of this.
I'll only make a ride public if I've got a little trophy, if I'm in the top 10.
Is that right?
Oh yeah. We're only making rides public when we're getting into the top 10 on the leaderboard, Rob.
It's like Al's only riding once a month.
But you're not a fan of these GPS trackers then?
Well, no, I mean, I also put these on my list as something you don't need. I mean, you know, they're a complete luxury and it is absolutely, you know, it's like something that you don't need to go out and enjoy your bike. Like there's so many rides that you can have when you're not tracking it. And yeah, it's great to know how you're doing, how your fitness is getting on, your performance and how you compare to your lifelong enemies on the Strava leaderboards. But, you know, realistically, do you really need it? Nah.
I guess for the most part, we're not training. I think, you know, where they really sort of are useful, and if you are someone who's looking at training, getting genuinely fitter and stronger and faster, then you'd probably actually need these things along with, you know, power meters, heart rate straps and all that.
And navigation.
And navigation as well, if you're going for big old schleps in the hills. But otherwise, I'd agree, like, they're not a necessity. You don't need one to go mountain biking.
I think more than anything, when you see the people's, like, year-end stats at the end, all it generally makes me do is feel bad that I haven't done as much as them. And it's just like, I can't be arsed. I don't want to see that. I feel bad enough as it is. I don't need that to be rubbed in my face.
I think the only year I did in lockdown 2020 or 2021, I can't remember which year, that was the 1 year I've tracked every single ride simply for the fact that I knew it was going to be a big year of riding. So yeah, hopefully that list has, you know, I think the positive ones, you know, are more takeaways that the ones, you know, we really think that you should, you know, mud guards, waterproof socks, decent tools, bike-specific shoes and bike work stands, which weirdly we segued straight past.
Yeah, and a jet wash as well. I don't know how we got past those.
But we ran out of time for those. So hopefully that's been a little bit of use. And, you know, obviously if you are a user of, you know, expensive winter shoes or kit like that, inserts and carbon wheels and bars, we are not saying that you are doing everything wrong. We're kind of just saying that, you know, if you're getting into it, don't feel pressured into having all these expensive things on top. You don't need them to go mountain bike and enjoy your time. But obviously, they're very nice to have if you can.
Exactly.
Beautifully said.
Thank you. Right. And on that note, we're going to wrap up here. Thanks ever so much. And thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review or drop us an email, podcast@bikerider.com, if you've got any questions or comments or bits of kit that you think are absolutely essential or maybe things that you don't think are essential. Let us know to hear from you. All right, thanks so much, and we'll be back very soon. Thanks for listening to the Bike Radar podcast. If you've not done so already, please subscribe and share with your friends, or leave us a rating if you've enjoyed this episode.